Hello, and welcome to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies.
Welcome to the latest Oxford Institute for Energy Studies podcast. My name is David Ledesma, and I'm Distinguished Research Fellow at the OIES. It's my great pleasure to be joined today by Jasmine Moto Nieto. She's an OIES CAPSARC Research Fellow, and we're here today to discuss the latest research paper that she's written with the OIES, titled Carbon Emissions Accounting in the Context of Carbon Capture and Storage, CCS, Coupled with Enhanced Oil Recovery, EOR. And that was published by the Institute in May 2023. So welcome, Jasmine, to the OIS podcast series.
Hello, David. Thank you very much for having me today.
Let's start perhaps with quite at a high-level question. You know, what is carbon capture accounting and why is it so important?
Well, carbon accounting refers to the process of measuring and tracking greenhouse gas emissions, especially those associated with an activity, product, or organization. Practically, what it means is, or what it does, is to quantify the amount of carbon emissions released into the atmosphere as a result of human activities, for instance, burning fossil fuels, industrial processes, or deforestation, to give you some examples. Well, it is relevant because it lies in the fact that it provides methods to systematically assess carbon emissions, so governments, industries, or even individuals can understand, identify, or evaluate their carbon footprint. I mean, the emissions they generate and the effectiveness of their mitigation strategies. Besides, carbon accounting methods help identify emission sources, such as energy use, transportation, waste management, or other production processes. Then you can collect related data and calculate the emissions. So this data usually is reported in standardized formats, frequently as inventories. Probably we are more familiar with this kind of ways to report carbon emissions. This has become a frequent and widely adopted practice to transparently communicate an organization's or project's emissions with the stakeholders, regulations, and the public. So, David, you can imagine that with the increasing interest in mitigating or negative effects on the environment, this accountability process for our actions is paramount. When it comes to the carbon emissions that we generate, carbon accounting is very helpful, and it provides a basis for developing emission reduction strategies and enables organizations and governments to monitor their progress. Also, it helps demonstrate their commitments in the transit to the so-called low-carbon economy, or even identifying opportunities for improvement in the greenhouse gas emissions control.
Okay, Jasmine, now in your paper, you focused on carbon accounting in the context of carbon capture and storage technology coupled with enhanced oil recovery. Now, could you perhaps tell our listeners why you focused on this technology?
Let me begin with a brief explanation of these two concepts. Carbon capture and storage, or CCS, is a set of technologies aimed to reduce or even remove human-made carbon emissions, particularly those generated by industrial and power generation facilities. We call them CO2 emission sources. Usually, a carbon capture plant is installed to separate CO2 from other gases generating during these industrial processes. Then it is compressed and transported from the source to a different site where another industry can use it or eventually store it. There are other or different uses for CO2, but the one I referred to in my paper is enhanced oil recovery, or EOR. It consists of injecting CO2 in oil fields to produce more oil and permanently storing CO2 in the rock pores. A reservoir is a rock body whose microscopic pores are filled with water, gas, and or oil. When we inject the CO2, it combines with these fluids, and there are physical and chemical reactions happening down there. First of all, CO2 mixed with oil makes the oil less dense and easier to extract. This is why We call this process enhanced oil recovery because it helps to produce more oil in an easier way. So that is why the petroleum industry has used CO2 historically to improve oil production. An excellent example of this is the Permian Basin in Texas in the United States. But here is an important note. When the CO2 that is injected comes from an industry like those I previously mentioned, this practice has an additional benefit. The CO2 that otherwise would have been released into the atmosphere is now disposed underground and eventually permanently sequestered. So the oil in the rock pores in the reservoir is now replaced with CO2. So these projects now are called CCUS, where the U stands for the utilization of the CO2. However, there has been a debate regarding whether these CCUS projects authentically help to reduce emissions. Is it possible that these projects sequester more CO2 emissions than those produced during the capture, injection, and sequestration process, and those derived from the additional oil produced? So that is one of the most frequent questions I have heard. And for many people, this formula makes no sense. We produce more oil, and even though we claim to be reducing emissions, so several studies have been carried out to solve this question, to answer this question, and I wanted to analyze this dilemma as well.
Now, in your paper, you make a distinction between attributional and consequential accounting methods. Now, can you perhaps explain the difference and which one is better?
As I just said, I was interested in understanding the potential of CCUS projects to reduce carbon emissions. So I found that the most widely adopted method to measure the carbon footprint is life cycle assessment, or LCA. So LCA is one of the various carbon accounting methods, which means that there are more than one, and I wanted to know how they work. That is how I bumped into the distinction between attributional and consequential methods. Practically, attributional methods provide a snapshot of the physical flow of emissions of one specific project within a temporal window. On the other hand, consequential methods describe the changes caused by a process or intervention, whatever and whenever they occur over time. And here, I want to say that having this distinction doesn't mean that these approaches are mutually exclusive. They can actually complement each other and serve for different purposes. I'm interested in consequential methods because they help forecast possible systemic consequences and help anticipate the effects that a project or intervention causes system-wide. They are very helpful in supporting decision-making, project design, and monitoring. I wouldn't say that one approach is better than the other. Each has different purposes, advantages, and challenges in their application. Understanding their difference is fundamental to selecting the one that is more appropriate to our evaluation. So practitioners, industries, governments, and academics should take some time to reflect on them and how they will use them. Unfortunately, non-attributional methods are seldom present in the literature, especially for CCS or CCUS project evaluation. Only a few studies use a consequential approach or look at the dynamic behavior that CCUS projects entail. I mean, the CO2 capture, utilization, and injection project evolve over time, especially within the reservoir and regarding the fluids management, and these are very important considerations. If we don't recognize this dynamic condition, we can miss the opportunity to foresee possible and intended results from CCUS implementation. And again, here's where I saw an opportunity and advantage of using a consequential approach.
So how do you determine, therefore, the change in emissions regarding carbon capture and storage with enhanced oil recovery?
The basis of the methodology I present in the paper is the Greenhouse Gas Protocol, also referred as the baseline and credit and intervention accounting method. It consists of developing a causal chain map of the project, identifying all the processes and activities that directly or indirectly reduce or increase greenhouse gas emissions derived from CCUS introduction. In this case, the mapping helped to define a baseline, I mean, how the emissions look without CCUS, and the intervention scenarios, how the emissions look when we introduce CCUS. So to build the model, you have to find data related to the greenhouse gas emissions of every process that you identified along the project's value chain and others, such as market-mediated effects. Notably is that consequential methods use marginal data, which can be challenging to find. So in such case, we use average data as the one used and produced by attributional methods, the ones I mentioned before. So we assume them as representative of the marginal system. In the case of CCUS projects, we look up for data related to the carbon capture plant construction and operation, the CO2 pipeline operation and construction, and all the activities related to the CO2 injection, including the different strategies that oil and gas companies can use in the management of fluids that are produced from the reservoir. So once we have built our baseline and intervention scenario, the formula is pretty easy. The change in emissions is estimated by subtracting the baseline emissions from the intervention scenario emissions. But very importantly is that this model has a time component. So the paper I present includes a consequential method and it introduces a time series, which allowed us to describe how the emissions of CCUS projects evolve and behave over time. The time frame of this analysis can extend beyond the operational project time if changes in emissions are predicted to occur later. This is also one of the most important contributions of the methodology and in the paper.
Now, you mentioned earlier in this podcast carbon capture, utilization, storage. So now, are there any considerations in carbon accounting in the context of CCUS projects?
Yes, actually, there are many. I will mention some of them. First of all, introducing CCUS as a means to reduce emissions involves the development of additional infrastructure and processes that have their own carbon footprint. These activities include CO2 capture, transportation and utilization, injection and produced fluids management, such as separation and recycling activities. So the emissions generated by these activities must be accounted for in the intervention scenarios. CO2 represents also a cost for field operators. So as more CO2 is trapped in the reservoir, there's more need for fresh CO2 to maintain the improvement of oil recovery. You can imagine that eventually a mix of CO2 with other fluids in the reservoir is produced, and there is a need for separation and recycle systems in the surface to remove CO2 from that mix. The problem is that the separation techniques are expensive and energy intensive, which adds an additional layer to the emissions introduced by CCUS application. Another consideration is that CCUS projects are dynamic and depend on the reservoir geological conditions, but also on the operational strategies adopted by the operators. CO2 can be injected continuously or alternated with water, and each injection strategy has specific operational characteristics and different effects within the reservoir. Therefore, the selection of the injection strategy is one of the fundamental steps. The models I developed show that depending on the project configuration and injection strategy, the projects can reduce or produce more emissions over time. This finding is based on a dynamic LCA study for CCUS in the USA that provides empirical data of how the carbon balance changes over time. So one can identify when the project will reach the cold transition point, when the project shifts from reducing to producing CO2. And this final statement is critical for regulatory and policy purposes. It seems that the question and concerns about the effective reduction of emissions through CCUS is authentic, and therefore, this project shouldn't be considered as a long-term strategy, but rather a transition process.
Now, Jasmine, your paper presents a case study from a Mexican CCS project. Now, can you perhaps share with our listeners an overview of the project and also your key findings?
In the paper, I referred to a hypothetical CCUS project in Mexico, where I am from. The case study assumes that the CO2 source is a refinery and CO2 is used for EOR in two oil fields. So CO2 is captured from the refinery and transported using a 100-kilometer pipeline to the what I call the ANCOF field. Then the CO2 produced from that field is transported through a second pipeline to a tied-in field 25 kilometers away for its injection. So we inject CO2 in this second field rather than immediately being recycled in the same anchor or first field. In that way, we increase the storage capacity. So what we did in the study case was model four intervention scenarios that combine two dynamic aspects identified in the causal chain mapping. One was the energy mix related to the energy consumption of the different processes involved in CCUS, as carbon capture, transport, and all the injection processes in the field. We also considered two CO2 injection strategies. On a broad level, the results show that although CCUS introduction represents a reduction in system-wide emissions, most refinery emissions are uncaptured, suggesting that CCUS should not be used as a long-term or defined option for emissions reduction. Instead, it would be considered a transition technology subject to multiple operational and market-mediated effects. Nevertheless, it is important to note that the projects can produce different outcomes depending on the injection strategies adopted and other operational considerations, such as integrating a gas separation process, which I previously mentioned can have an important or significant impact on the project's carbon footprint.
So to finish up, Jasmine, can I ask you if you believe that using EOR is actually justifiable and, you know, will it lead to emissions reductions in the future?
Well, David, this is a very controversial question. The outcomes of CCUS implementation depend on what is the ultimate goal that the industry or government implementing it pursues. According to our model, CCUS projects can certainly provide an environmental benefit for a certain period of time and under specific operational conditions. But we must be aware that eventually those projects will exhaust its capacity to reduce emissions. Another important thing is that there are other changes in emissions that are not directly related to the operational and physical CO2 flow along the CCUS value chain, but associated with market-mediated effects. These effects can rapidly change based on the oil market conditions and marginal production oil worldwide. Therefore, determining whether CCUS with EOR is the best alternative to reduce emissions requires careful analysis of the different scenarios. I can conclude that CCUS shouldn't be considered a long-term solution for reducing emissions, but rather a transition technology.
Well, Jasmine, you know, thank you so much for your time today. I really enjoyed our conversation that builds on the messages from your paper, Carbon Emissions Accounting in the Context of Carbon Capture and Storage Coupled with Enhanced Oil Recovery, that, as I mentioned earlier, was published by the Institute in May 2023. So I hope you've all enjoyed listening to this podcast. Thank you and goodbye to everyone.
Thank you for listening to this podcast from the Oxford Institute for Energy Studies. You can find other podcasts, as well as our written research, on our website at www.oxfordenergy.org. If you would like more details about our energy transition, gas, oil, electricity, or China research programs, then please contact us at information@oxfordenergy.org.